Session number 5868, Horton Monday, part 41.
Because I was in it from the first week at the beginning. I went through it. I was wounded on three different occasions. I spent the last 20 months as a prisoner of war, so I think I can speak from experience and give my view. And that is that, as I've said before, no heroes, no cowards. Because once you left England as a young man, whether young or old, it don't matter. If you'd never seen war before, once you stepped into those trenches, frontline trenches, and had a smattering, bashing with shell fire, you wasn't human again after that. I'm sure you was not human. Your mind went, and you turned from a human being to a machine. And I don't think you knew what you were doing half your time, or you would never have done it. Because I've seen chaps myself, not once, but many times, they've done things that they should have had a VC for, but they wasn't seen doing it. And I've seen those same chaps later on, worried, even crying, depressed and down in the dumps and not seen again. But had they been seen on either occasion, they would have either had a medal or a court-martial. Because at that time, early in the war, as I've said before, it was strict discipline of the old, old days. And so many, many men then was court-martialed and faced a firing squad simply because the nerves went and it was nothing more. And that happened often and often. And so early on, early in 1915, it was published in the press and they began to complain about it because they began to know what was actually happening. And as I've said before, the parents of those chaps or the next of kin had a lovely letter saying that they had died fighting for the country. Not a court-martial, fighting for the country. That was the letter the parents got. Well, now, the outcome of that was happened very, very quickly, within months, as the saying is. All the ambulance trains were simply turned quickly. Each ambulance coach was altered to have a padded cell in it. And I know that's right because I helped dismantle them after the war. Each coach had a padded cell, and the chaps that had breakdowns, which was nothing more than nervous breakdowns, they couldn't help it, and they were sent home and sent to asylums and so cured. But otherwise, early on, they were shot for that. I could give you many instances that you would catch it for, such as night and mornings, I've told you before. You had to, what they call, stand to. Well, now, if they should be giving you heavy shelling when you should be standing to all along the trench, and one of them was found, his nerves had gone, and he'd dive back and lay in a dugout frightened to death. If he was found there, that was a sure thing. And another one was, if you was caught fast asleep on your post, that was another one. And also, if by chance someone was frightened and found himself wandering about behind the lines the next day, some distance back, that was another sure thing. On the other tape, I told you that I would tell you how my old mate Sid Carroll got busted up. Well, it happened like this. Behind our lines, the front line, well, there was only one line there, naturally, a trenches, and between that and the wood, there was an old farmhouse, large farm building, and a little way farther behind that was a farm labourer's cottage. Well, now, underneath those farm buildings was large cellars, and they always used to keep a platoon of reserves in those cellars in case the Germans broke through the front line. And on this particular occasion, our platoon had to take over this farmhouse and the cottage, the cellars, and my old mate Sid wasn't with me then, he was with the others in this large building cellars. But I was put at this cottage behind with my section, only about, as I said, 8 or 10 of them. And I was put in that in the cellar in this cottage. Well, now, during the day, old Jerry had one of his flares and let loose shells everywhere. And soon after he started, it hadn't been on many seconds shelling before I heard a hell of a scream from this farm. And evidently a shell had hit it. And heard this scream. Well, before that happened, soon as they started shelling, I told our chaps, the few of them, I said, stand ready, and they all got ready in the cellar. Well, I crawled up and lay on the floor behind, most of the buildings was knocked down, but I lay flat on the floor and looked out across to the lines to see if it was all right. See, nothing happened. Anyway, I heard this hell of a scream, and I shouted across, I said, who's that? Well, now, a brattle chap, Arthur Willis, as a matter of fact, he shouted back, he knew I was there, shouted back, he said, Ort, he said, it's your old mate Sid. Well, I never thought for a blooming second. I jumped up and started to run across towards this farm, and he shouted back, go on back, he said, he'd be all right, go back. So I turned round and run back into this cottage, lay there again, and I stayed there, laid there till the shelling finished, and they didn't break through anyway. It all quietened down and nothing happened. Well, when it got dark at night, above all things, along came a sergeant and a corporal to me in this cellar, and the sergeant turned to the corporal. He said, you take charge of these men. And he turned to me, he said, you're under arrest. I said, what the hell are you talking about? Yes, he said, you're under arrest, come with me. Well, I went out, and as we were going across from this cottage towards the lines, he said, I wouldn't like to be in your shoes. I said, why, what's up? He said, you'll be put on charge. I said, what for? Well, he said, as near as I can tell you, it'll be desertion and cowardice under shellfire. I said, what the hell are you on about? He said, you'll see. Well, he took me back, took me in front of Captain Birchall. He was the captain of our company. So, he said, you know what you're charged with, don't you? I said, no. He says, cowardice, desertion under shell fire. He said, that's what your charge is. He said, you know what that means. Because I did, I knew what that meant. But anyway, I told him, I said, well, I said it were my mate. I said, been mates all her life, I said. And they told me that he was it. I said, so I never thought I jumped out and started to run. He said, yes, yes, he said. He says, no good you denying it. He said, I saw you from the dugout where I was. I saw you run out. He said, and I saw you run back. He said, and you left your men. He said, that was desertion. You left your men under shell fire. He said, and that was desertion and cowardice. So, he said, well, he said, suppose anything had happened to you. He said, and that broke through. He said, oh, I don't know where they missed you. He said, or why you wasn't killed. He said, but if I had a broke through, he said, there was your men there without a leader. He said, and that's what would have happened. But anyway, he said, there's just one small thing in your favour. He said, when you ran out, you was running towards the Germans and not away from them. He said, that may have saved you just a little bit. He said, well, he said, I won't send a report through. But oh, blimey, he gave me a right royal dressing down and told me. He said, you're trained to be a soldier. He said, and if you're an NCO or any position at all, he said, you must show it. You must lead your men. He said, and it don't matter, even in a battle, in attack, it don't matter, whatever it is. He said, if it's your brother, you must not stop. He said, you're trained to come here to kill, he said. He said, the stretcher bearers provided for casualties. It's not your job. It's your job to keep straight on and kill. But anyway, after a good old dressing down, he sent me back. I went back to the cellar where these other chaps was, and the corporal, he was took away, and I took charge again. But now my old mate Sid, he got a proper pasting. What actually happened, he was always daft, same as I was. It was a pretty warm day. He come up out the cellar, got a bucket of water, took his tunic and shirt off, and stood having a wash up top out of the cellar. Well, because there was only half the farm left. But anyway, he was having a wash behind the wall, stripped out, and a shell hit the wall, or some part of it anyway. Oh, it scattered poor old Sid. When they got him back to hospital in England, how many operations he had, I don't know, but quite a lot. I said his back was like a pepper box, all bits of bricks all over him. But anyway, his luck was dead in, because after they got all his wounds repaired and patched up, he was finished with the war. So he had no more war at all. That cleared him up nice and comfortable. But anyway, now there's a sort of a climax to what I told you about old Captain Birchall telling me off and about not, oh blimey. Well, what actually happened, now that must have been a year or perhaps getting on for 2 years later, because I was home wounded and transferred to another regiment later, but I wasn't with them just at that time on the Somme. Now during the battle, there were several battles on the Somme, they call it the Battle of the Somme, but there was any amount of battles on the Somme, and on this particular battle, Captain Burchill and the books went over in one attack, and they lost quite a lot of men. Well, then later, I was reinforced from England with others, built up full strength. Now, what happens in a battle, they give them a hell of a belting with what they call a barrage. They put a barrage on the front line, or the enemy's front line, as much as they can, plaster it with shells, and then they do what they call lift the barrage and put the shelling on the reserve lines. Well, now, as soon as they lifted the barrage, the Germans had all been down below, and as their troops went over, on more than one occasion, but on the one I'm talking about, they went over, and because as soon as the barrage lifted to go on the second line of theirs, they come up out their dugouts and simply plastered our lot and lost a hell of a lot of casualties. Well, now, old Captain Burchill, he was a brave man. Well, I said before, everybody were brave, but never mind, I ain't arguing about that again. But he was a brave man, old Burchill. Well, what he decided to do when it was his turn, he made up his mind that before the barrage lifted, he'd go over the top and run through, take our troops through her own barrage just a few seconds before it should lift from their front line. And that was his idea, and he tried it. Well, the result was that Burchill copped a packet. And old Joe Scragg, you know, old Joe I talked about, Joe was his servant, and he was with him all the time. Now, Captain Burchill got it. Old Joe, with him, got hold of him, dragged him back into her own lines, looked after him as well as he could, but eventually Burchill was brought home and died of wounds. Now then, this is what the result was. Captain Burchill had the DSO, that's the next order to the VC for a commission rank, officer's rank. Old Joe had the DCM, which was next to a VC for a private or an NCO. Now then, old Burchill, if he'd have done what he told me I'd got to do, what would have happened then? They got honours for that, although they deserved it. Oh, blimey, I should think they did deserve it. But there's just a difference, you see. If old Joe had done what Burchill told me I ought to have done, kept straight on, there's the difference. As I've said before, you're nothing more than a well-oiled machine, and that's about the limit. Now, when Ashley comes, it must be getting on towards the half hour, I just felt my old brow clock. Now, when Ashley comes tomorrow, I'll get him to set it up for me again, and perhaps pass a little time away again the next few days and do a bit and tell you how I got busted up. As I told you on the other side of this tape, that I'd tell you how I first got my lot of wounds. Well, that, of course, as you might guess, was at Plug Street Wood. Well, now, just at that time, it wasn't all that far away from where we were to the Ypres front, and also L-60. Well, just at that time, there was a large battle going on, what was called the Battle of L-60, and that was led and performed by the Canadian Army when it came over. And the battle was led by Colonel Burchill. Now, strange as it may seem, Colonel Burchill was Captain Burchill's brother, and he led that attack blowing a bugle horn the same as if he was out hunting. He was well known for that, and he went and led them over the top, but he was killed. Now, the Burchill family, they were very, very wealthy. As I told you about Joe Scragg, after the war, he was invited to go to the family for what he'd done with Captain Burchill. But he didn't go. He should have done, but he didn't go. But they sent him a cheque for £100. Well, that was a lot of money in those days. Well, now let's get back and tell you what happened to me. Well, while that battle was going on at L60, the Germans were very, very jumpy. And they gave us a pasting as well, shellfire, and knocked a big hole in the barbed wire in front of our trenches. Well, during the day, Pinky Brown came along. I stood talking to a couple of our chaps, and he came up to me and he said, I want you to get two volunteers to come over and patch that wire up tonight. Well, these two chaps straight away said, yes, we'll come. So that was all right. Well, now, we used to have, as we went into relieve, you was loaded up like a pack mule to take supplies into the line whenever you came from relief, such as cars of barbed wire, sandbags, picks, shovels, rifle ammunition, boxes of hand grenades, and so on. So there was always plenty supplied in the trench. Well, now, it came night time. Got dark. It was a lovely, quiet night. And Pinky Brown came along, and we got this coil of barbed wire. Pinky Brown and this other three, we slid over the top and crawled gently down to the wire. You had to be very, very quiet because, as I told you, we was only about 100 yards or so apart. So we had to be very quiet, and we slowly wound the barbed wire round from one post to another, because there was posts driven in the ground, and we wound this coil. It was a big coil and a stick through the centre so you could unwind it. And we'd almost finished the job when suddenly, bang, down I went. Well, now, I couldn't have shouted if I had that open fire, you know, with a machine gun. But anyway, I never made a sound. None of us made a sound. We laid quiet for some time, and eventually Pinky Brown and the others dragged me back, and when we got me to the trench, I always remember, there was a load of our chaps waiting. They pulled me in. They sent along a stretcher bearers came along. They cut me putties off, ripped me trousers all up. It was wounded in the leg. And bandaged it up as well as they could. And the stretcher bearers then, they took me back into the wood and through the wood, and there was ambulance waiting for casualties, and put me in this ambulance, and away we went. Well, now, we went, they took me to a town, I think it was a biggish town, what I could recall of it, and it was a place called Beauval, I think that was Beauval, some name like that. Well, that's where they took me to, and when we got there, they took us into a factory, and it was like a large warehouse, and all over the floor, there were stretchers here, there, and everywhere, because they was bringing the wounded back from the Battle of L60 at the same time. because the floor was covered with stretchers. And here's a strange thing. I lay there on the stretcher, and what they do then, the doctor comes along, examines you, looks at your wounds, dresses them, and sticks a label on your tunic, whatever it is. Well, in my case, the label they stuck on was severe leg wounds. And while I lay there was a chap come up to me. He says, "Hello, what?" I said, "Oh, blimey." It was a Brattle chap, and he was in the ambulance, the Stratford ambulance. Now, in pre-war days, Stony Stratford used to have a ambulance team similar to the Territorials. I think they was attached, as a matter of fact. Well, this chap named Green lived out the back of me, his brother did for years. But anyway, it was him. That was funny meeting him. And so, of course, we had a long old chat. And eventually then, he was moved to the Royal Aid. Well, it was a long train. There was loads of casualties. And they were fitted up very nice, those ambulance trains was. And beds all along. And I remember there was a chap laid just opposite me. There were two rows and a corridor down the centre, and the beds was each side. And this chap, we were googling and googling, so I said to one of the orderlies, I said, "What's up with him?" Oh, he said he'd been shot through the throat. And any road, before we went all that distance, he kept quiet, so he passed out. Well, now, we went from there to Belong. And we went into a marvellous large building there, hospital, and it was named the Royal Pindy. That was the name of the hospital. And that's where they took me to. And I always remember, I thought how funny it was, because they never bothered with putting screens around beds, whatever you was, you. They looked after you, and if you died, you died, and that was that. Now, there was a chap laid straight opposite me, and I'd never see anything like it in my life. He'd had his leg cut off. They'd cut his leg off just above the knee, so you could see all the meat. And I could see that leg straight opposite me and all the veins in it, like cutting through a leg of lamb or something like that. I thought how funny it was. But anyway, we wasn't there long. They never kept us there long. And then they loaded us up onto a hospital ship. I forget the name of the hospital ship now, but I know it was an Irish boat called the St. Patrick. Now, I'm in a tangle now whether it was the St. Patrick that I came on that time, or whether it was the second time I was wounded. But anyway, I know it was the St. Patrick boat that I was on one or the other, and it was fitted up beautiful. All nurses on it, they came along, they give you cigarettes or a pipe and tobacco, whatever you wanted. They looked after you marvellous. Eventually, we arrived from Belong to Dover. Now, when we got there, everything was organised to absolute perfection. We was carried off on stretchers from the boat, put onto ambulance train. There was nurses, ambulance men, looked after beautiful.